right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. No Survivor still now or in the foreseeable future, unfortunately, but we are finding new things to get into here on the main feed. And today, I am really excited because I am going to be joined by a guest to talk through the game that is sweeping the nation, potentially, at the very least sweeping my Twitter timeline. We're going to be talking Among Us, a relatively new game available on Steam for PC or in, I think, pretty much any app store if you want to play on mobile. And I want to preface this by saying, first of all, I've never podcasted about a computer game before. The most recent video game console I owned, I think, was a Nintendo 64, to just kind of set the bar low right away for myself. But I have furthermore just kind of been grateful, I guess, for my entire adult life to never really be into video games. And joining me today is the man who kind of ruined that blissful ignorance for me. It is Puya Zanvakili. Puya, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Colin. It is strange thinking about it. The last time I was here on the network, we talked about, I want to say it was the International Survivors. So it's been a minute. Mm-hmm. And I've also never talked about a video game of any sorts. But this seems like a special occasion. And this game, honestly, is really special. And it's pretty ridiculous how it's come across our lives. Because it isn't just the timeline. It isn't just the nation. This is global, baby. This game has taken over the world right now.
Yeah, I saw some crazy statistics about it blowing up on Twitch to potentially an historic extent, like faster than any other game has before. And you are potentially partially responsible for that. Puya, you are streaming Among Us over on Twitch. Is it every Sunday at 5? Is that the schedule for Among Us?
Yeah, 5 Eastern on Sundays. I've been bringing on friends from the podcasting world over to play. It honestly is truly wild. And it's not only for me personally, like I have a lot of fun streaming it. I have a lot of fun playing it. I have a lot of fun watching streams, man. That's how I really got into it first, was just watching it blow up on Twitch and just watching other people play.
Oh, interesting. I was going to actually ask you about your background as a gamer in general, because you're certainly someone who has taken quite an interest in many different reality TV games, for sure. And we will certainly focus primarily on Among Us today, but are you someone who is a big video gamer historically?
So, like, it's interesting because I feel like I don't know what what people define as gamer, because I feel like if gamer indicates that you have to be, like, really good, then probably not. But as far as video game enthusiast, all my life, I grew up, my mom owned an Atari that she would only bring out for special days where we've been good. And this is like when I'm like, what, 4 or 5 playing that. Then my dad got me the Sega. That's where I fell in love with the Mario world. And then the biggest console in my life was the PS1. We got that. That could play VCDs as well as games, so you could watch stuff and play games on it, which was kind of mind-blowing at the time. And then, yes, and then after that, I fell into the GameCube side of things. We had the Nintendo GameCube for a couple of years. Obviously went through the Mario parties, the Smash Bros, the Mario Karts, where everyone goes. Multiplayer Haven, that one. And then, yeah, after that, my first ever paycheck I got, I used it all to get an Xbox 360. After that, I ventured into the Xbox One. And then it wasn't until this year where I actually started, these last couple of years where I started getting games on the PC more and really appreciating just like, hey, I can just do this here and it kind of works for me. It's good. So, yeah, typically not too massive of a gamer. Don't really play all the games. I don't have like a big catalog. I like the games I like, so I keep getting those, but I don't really deviate normally. But when I do, it's off something on Steam that I've seen someone else play and I'm like, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, so I have substantially less experience than even that. When I was a little kid, I had a Super Nintendo, and then in like middle school got a Nintendo 64, and that was the end of that. And all of the I'm now realizing this after not piecing this together nearly as quickly as I should have, all of the video gaming that I've done since then has been on Nintendo 64 as well. Like, my friends who own video game consoles some of them have like Xboxes or whatever, but the most common things that we play are on Nintendo 64. And maybe that just like totally dates me as the most typical millennial whatever, but it is almost shocking to me how few video games I guess I've played over the years. But particularly when it comes to computer games, I've never gotten into any of the online kind of multiplayer games that I can think of, like, ever before in my life. But as you said, Among Us has definitely been taking over. AOC has been streaming it, or at least did once, and that was one of the most watched Twitch streams of all time.
Yeah,
it sounds like you know about the history of how this all began, so I would love to hear about that a bit more.
Yeah, so Among Us got released, like, the game was released in 2018, mobile first, early in the summer, and then by the end of the summer, they moved it over and made it available on Steam. And so there's the whole premise of Among Us, for those who are new, it's a lobby of up to 10, and there's anywhere between 1 to 3 imposters, depending on which settings you choose. And it's basically like a video game based game of Mafia, where there's 2 imposters, typically maybe 3, maybe 1. And their goal is to sabotage whatever map you're on, sabotage like the ship, the planet, wherever you're at, and kill all of you. The other people, the townspeople, the villagers, or in this case, the crewmates, their objective is to complete tasks around the ship, basically fixing everything and trying to get it done before the imposters rule. And the ways they can win is obviously completing all their tasks or reporting bodies as they find them and figuring out who the imposters are before it's too late. So that's kind of the base objective of the game. So it's not even a complex game. It's a relatively simple interface. It's a relatively simple like graphics usage on the game. It doesn't take much out of your computer to do. And this game ended up calling, so 2 years ago, 2018 is when it went down. But the popularity of the game did not happen till this summer, till, you know, fast forward to 2020. We're in quarantine. Everyone's home and everyone's jonesing for those game nights. They're jonesing for, you know, those hangouts with friends. Those in-person Mafia games are not happening anymore. People aren't really getting together to play any board games at this point. Enter this game. So I believe it was a Twitch streamer known as Soda Poppin. He was the one who really brought the game back. He played with a lobby of friends. And then after that, a bunch of people around the Twitch community started picking it up as well. And basically the ambitious fact that it's a 10-person lobby means you get to have, like, if you're a streamer, it's you plus 9 other personalities, to them, Twitch streamers, that will also bring a following, that also have fans, that also have people that want to meet them. And through this, we've seen the most insane lobbies you could ever imagine. Like you mentioned, AOC did play a game with some very popular streamers to push for people to vote. It was the second highest ever streamed stream on Twitch, only beaten by Ninja in the year 2017, who did a live stream with Drake playing Fortnite, which had about 600,000 people. AOC pulled in about 430,000 anyways. So, and this was like 2 weeks ago. So this game is at the height of its popularity at the moment. It was brought back at the time. So back in 2018, there was only one map, Colin. The map you're familiar with, the main one. And
yes.
Then,
yeah, I'm and then, familiar like, with dying on it at your hands often.
Yeah, it's been very fun playing with you. The other two maps were added as kind of DLCs later in that about a year later. And they were about like $2-3 a piece. And then earlier this year, before the game got popular again, they put all of it in June. They put both maps in the base game and sold it as one game worth $5 on Steam.
And that was a big price decrease, right?
Yeah, because I believe it was closer to $20 at initially. Or if it wasn't, it was still like you were still paying about the game's price now to just get the other two maps.
Right. And how much of the popularity do you think has to – how much, I guess, do you think is COVID-specific or people being stuck indoors and Zoom calls becoming ubiquitous and everyone having easy access to that sort of thing? Or with Twitch being and as far as I can tell, constantly increasing kind of presence online. Is this something you see sticking around indefinitely the same way that something like Fortnite has?
I think this is definitely going to be sticking around, because I do think that the biggest piece of the puzzle was the fact that quarantine was happening, but also not that this game kind of became popular in the midst of quarantine, because at the early goings, everyone was figuring out how to, you know, deal with being home. How am I going to get my social interaction? And we found those ways. You know, like, I can speak from experience. I got involved in doing a weekly trivia with people. So we would get in a call. Our team would get in a call and we would discuss the questions. We would do that. And then at the end of the night, we'd play a little bit of Code Names, you know, it's like games that are standardized use, but to a certain degree, you do that for 4 months, you want to start finding something new. So I feel like everyone was at that point of like, well, I need something else now. I need something a little bit more. And then boom, here comes a video game that also still adds that social element that allows you all to indulge and all to play together. But then also, the other big piece, it's like if it was a two-piece, one is quarantine, the other side is Twitch. Because with quarantine, it meant more people being home during the day, more people being home more often. And therefore, that means there's more people willing to have hours to watch content elsewhere, hours to watch content on Twitch. And a lot of these Twitch streamers, if you look at their numbers, they've gone up exponentially. There's this streamer by the name of Sykuno, who he's part of one of the big crews that has popularized Among Us now. And he has gone up, he's doubled his following in just the Among Us boom of the summer. He's up to, I think he hit 1 million like last week or so. So there's definitely more eyes on Twitch, which makes it so that people are going to be more likely to be watching things. And then it just, the fact that there's 10, because like, here's the thing. There was another game that was popular right before Among Us took over, and that was Fall Guys. And Fall Guys is a relatively simple game. It's kind of like an obstacle course battle royale, where you get in a lobby of 60 people, and your goal is to get to the end of the obstacle course, and then every round, like, a bunch of people get eliminated until you get to the final obstacle course, which has, like, about 10 people in it, and then one person takes all. That was going well, Colin, but the big missing element with Fall Guys was that it wasn't as much fun or intriguing to have other people in your party. It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Among Us, I can join to watch a stream that has one guy I like, and I can meet seven other people that I enjoy as well through that process. And just the interactions amongst friends is always fun. I think that's the other big thing. We got into listening to podcasting because not only did we want the breakdown, did we want the analysis, but also the growing chemistry between like these two, three co-hosts is well worth my time, and it's fun for me to listen to. So now we have that in the form of this game, and it's a good time. The other element for us, and this is specifically our world, I don't even know if this is a global thing, but we come from the social strategy realm. We come from the, what are the growing metas of the game? What are the new things people are doing? What are some strategies you can try? And that opens a whole new door of intrigue, because depending on who your lobby is, how many people, what map you're playing, how often you're playing, what role you have, you can keep changing what you're doing, and it's never going to feel stale, which is also great.
Yes, so I totally agree with exactly that kind of replayability thing being an enormous improvement upon the other kind of mafia werewolf. You know, I certainly spent plenty of time, as did Dom, in the secret Hitler streets for a little while there. And while all of those are extremely fun, none even come close, as far as I'm concerned, to the replayability benefits that Among Us has. And one thing that I love is just how many different things you can change around, not only the map, but just the settings within the game, how many tasks people are doing, how well people can see, things like that, that when you find games becoming unbalanced, you can easily just change things until they hit a more balanced kind of ratio. And the other enormous improvement upon those other social strategy games that I'm guessing a lot of people listening to this podcast have played before, maybe the fundamental thing in my mind that sets Among Us apart, I guess there are kind of two things, but the one I will address first is the timed element. You have, at least in the settings that we play, 2 minutes. Maybe that's variable, but either way, there are no 20-minute deliberations about which vote to be casting, and that is such an enormous difference maker.
Yeah, I will say one of the drawbacks of a game like Mafia is that if you are one of the early people killed, you might have to go find something else to do for a cool 30 minutes until the next game, which that's why it's like it's intense, because then it hurts more when you're out first, because, well, I was having fun, now I'm not having fun because I have to sit here. So the one thing that I will say is a benefit with Among Us is that there is a time cap on the deliberation. If you want further deliberation, you have to do one of two things. You can either report a body if you find one, or you hit an emergency button meeting, which you get one of per entire game. So if we're in a game of 15 minutes and I use mine in the second minute, I can no longer call a meeting if I want to deliberate. I got to hope that I found a body or something. So limiting that makes sure that the game goes quickly, and it keeps it so that you're constantly refreshing, because the average span of one game can go anywhere between about 5 minutes to maybe 15 tops. And then before you know it, you're back in the lobby starting a fresh game.
Exactly. Yeah. And even when you die early, you still go around and do all your tasks. And that gives you something to do and gives you that little dopamine rush. And that was the second big point I wanted to say that I think is in this game's favor versus the other things that we were playing before, which is the task element and just the topography, I guess, of the layout is a big, big deal, because generally speaking, at least after a bunch of iterations, our group, and I would imagine people listening to this would be playing amongst mostly game literate people as well and would fall into this trap, got just so used to like what is the generally right idea that it became not only stale but also just gave one side or the other a pretty big advantage if people were playing mostly correctly. In Among Us, the tasks eliminate any real possibility of all of the innocent people, the villagers, the liberals, in this case, the crewmates, just sticking together and being face up liberal the whole time, because that is just the game plan in all of those other games. And it's, and unfortunately still is the game plan here in Among Us, is when you're innocent, just be as overtly innocent as you possibly can. There's no reason to do anything else ever. At least in Among Us, the tasks force people to physically split apart and go do things and give the imposters a real chance. And also it just keeps it so different every time, because people are going to take different paths every time.
Absolutely. Like, I do think there's, when we first started, because I'd watched the amount of streams I had, I definitely felt that I had, there was a knowledge gap and I was ahead of a lot of people. 2-3 weeks in, it's been equalized, and there's definitely people I play with that are better than me, just because of the, you know, you play more and more, but then again, emergent strategy comes through, but then people are constantly changing their tells. The other thing I wanted to speak on, Colin, is the fact that the nature of Among Us being, well, first of all, it's a video game at its core, but then there's the, like, the Mafia deliberation element is great, but also the fact that it's usually, typically, it's audio only for deliberation, and that is the great equalizer, because I will tell you, in playing Mafia, in playing Secret Hitler, I have a hard time hiding my face. I'm constantly thinking who's reading my face, looking at the cameras, like, okay, is this
person
studying?
I must be confusing you with some guy who won Sequester.
Listen, these are the facts. This is true. This is true. Couple of bevs helped me. It was a longer game that helped me, but if there's like only me and one other person that are different than everyone else and everyone's looking at me, I'm going to start sweating it.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So then add to that the fact that they can't really see you. I can, you know, kill someone, get away with it, and then in deliberation kind of be behind a screen just laughing at the fact that they're not figuring me out. Whereas I can't hide my face if we get on deliberation and someone cracks a joke about someone being dead. I might slip up even 1 second, and that can be a problem. So it forces people to focus on people's words and logic and pathing, which I appreciate, because then the physical tells are out the window. Someone who might not be great at hiding themselves as an imposter now has a better chance of doing it, and a more equal chance compared to like the best liar of the liars.
No, absolutely no question about it. It is really well balanced, like perfectly balanced, in that respect. And to clarify, the tasks that we're talking about, for anyone who's unfamiliar, are extraordinarily basic. Like the first time that I was playing, I thought to myself, "Oh my God, a third grader could do this." And then it took me a minute to realize, oh, that's the point. They want anyone to be able to do this and pay money to do this. Felt like kind of an idiot there, but they are essentially just reasons you have to go stand still somewhere for anywhere between like 1 to 10 seconds, which is going to both vary greatly from game to game and force you to take different routes throughout the course, and also just give the imposters a fighting chance at cracking through a liberal majority that has no incentive to do anything untrustworthy, which from a game design element, I think is just such a huge improvement. And I don't mean to make it sound like Mafia and Werewolf and Secret Hitler are poorly designed games. They're certainly
No.
very fun games. I just feel like these are some totally crucial differences that make enormous improvements. Another thing that I like is no matter how sus you may end up looking, there are win conditions for the imposters where they can just cut off the air, or kill the reactor or whatever. And if the crew doesn't go to particular locations that the imposters can anticipate right away, they're going to just lose the game on the spot. There are different ways for both the innocent people and the guilty parties to win in interesting ways that I think make the game far more balanced than any of the kind of just pure social strategy games, on top of course, the very real issue that you flagged up of when you just play those kind of games face to face with people so long, it definitely becomes a lot easier to figure out who is acting different than they normally do when you've seen them be innocent 100 times, literally, before that. I was thinking, though, because you are not, of course, alone in streaming this among the reality TV community. Kirsten McInnes is streaming Hide and Seek Among Us Saturday nights. And then also, I saw Boston Rob and Tyson
Oh, yeah.
are streaming this. I just was cracking up at the idea of, like, Boston Rob's approach to Among Us, where it's like, okay, we're all gonna go to the admin to swipe our card, and then we're all gonna go to med bay and do our scan, then we're all gonna go to navigation, and like anyone who separates from the pack is dead. Like, it is, I genuinely want to tune in to see how that goes with them.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I will say with Among Us, that it's been around long enough. People are finding new and innovative ways to play it. Outside of the regular game, which we talked about, which also you can customize the rules 7 ways to have it be a different game. You can have, with the new beta, you can have anonymous voting, which wasn't there before. You can have it so that the task bar does not move during the game, so people can't be watching the task bar to figure out how close they are. And then the hide and seek version that Kirsten has been streaming that you brought up, where people can essentially, the goal is, there's one imposter, and their goal is to kill everybody. Your goal is to get all the tasks done. However, you're not supposed to report any bodies. There's going to be a lot less of a vision so that you can't see the killer coming. So it's more exciting, like thrilling situation there. And I've watched Boston Rob and Tyson play Among Us. They played a couple of weeks ago with Rob as well, Rob Cesternino. And it's interesting because they don't mute while playing. They'll like be talking about random stuff while taking each other out. So it definitely is a different vibe. So, and that's the thing is that I also know people who prefer to play with the cameras on anyways. So you could play this in any different type of way and it will work for you. And I think that honestly is the beauty of it because I will say I know people who like I love both Mafia and Secret Hitler. I've played both. I always go when I'm invited, no doubt about it. But I also know people who just can't deal because if they are more of the sus type, they will always get tackled early on, whether they're innocent or not, and then they'll get taken out and then they just have to wait there for 40 minutes while everyone else plays, and it's not a fun experience for them.
Oh no, I think Among Us does a great job of negating that for that sort of person, such as myself, who I think may have gotten taken out a little early from time to time during Secret Hitler days. But I honestly, I get it. As far as my opponents are concerned, a couple of things that I did want to say as far as potential roadblocks in terms of getting into the game.
Yes.
Is there are some very real downsides to trying to play without really being familiar with the map or being familiar with what tasks you're supposed to be doing and where they are. Like I had a friend of mine get into it and I've told her to just spend time practicing negotiating the tasks and navigating the map and so forth. I do think that is one possible hang up for people, but it really is something that is worth, first of all, an undertaking worth going for, because it is such a rewarding payoff. And also, it just initially, I feel like at least, seems much harder than it will turn out to be in terms of getting that sort of thing down. So that was the first kind of red flag that I wanted to raise. And then the other one, which I do think is a factor for a noteworthy number of people, is I cannot say this from any kind of firsthand experience because I have stayed out of the public lobbies, but based on what heard, you basically need a group to play with because the public lobbies are all just like one giant YouTube comment section and people all just quit if they don't get to be the imposter.
Yeah, the public lobbies have been getting worse and worse as the game is becoming,
shocking.
Yeah, becoming more popular, right? They were I started playing in the public lobbies because I just wanted to, you know, play a little bit while I was watching a stream or two. And that's exactly what happened. So when a lobby of 10 starts, you got to assume you're going to go down to 8 real quick, because the minute they show your role, two people will leave because they didn't get the imposter and that's all they want to do is kill. The other problem is with the public lobbies is that oftentimes it'll be like one or two friends who are playing together and they just needed to fill up a slot of 8. But the two of them will be communicating the whole time the game's going on, because it's not like they don't care about the integrity of the game. They're playing together. So if one of them dies, the other one tells them who killed them. And it's like, well, I know that green is the imposter because my friend told me. And it's like, well, that ruins the game for sure. So definitely it is a game that you can get away with playing public if you just want to play the mechanics of it, but you will get frustrated. So definitely finding yourself a lobby of 10 people, even 8 people, 6 people, you can tinker with the settings to make it so that it works. That is definitely the preferred method for sure. The beauty of it is a lot of people are playing it, so you're most likely to find somebody. And then the other thing is I want to talk about what I'm going to call the Akiva rule, which to me is if Akiva Winokur can play this game, you can also play this game. The man, I would have never expected it, but first time we got him to play on one of our streams on a Sunday, he was having a tough time of it. It was not looking great, and it all added up. I was like, this is what I expected. Fast forward to 2 weeks later, he's put in some more hours on the game, and he is a force to be reckoned with. The tasks are not too – the first of all, the graphics, the tasks, the controls, the mechanics are not too complex. So that you don't have to be an average gamer. It's an entry-level game. You just have to play it a couple of hours, and you've got it sorted. Usually now when I invite someone to play and they haven't really played, I send them 2 YouTube videos that are how-tos, and then I send them a third video which shows every task in every map, which allows them to see, okay, this is what the visuals are for it. This is how it looks. And then the game does come with a free play option at the starting menu, which allows you to insert yourself in any map, and it gives you a bunch of tasks to do so you can figure out where everything is. And obviously, like you mentioned, the map is a big, big deal, because the truth is at this point, you know, we're about to start November. You're going to be in a position where quite a few people have played. So if you're new, they're going to ask you, oh, what were you doing in this room? And you're not going to know what they're talking about. So typically what we've done is I've also saved all the maps on my computer, and then when there's a new person in the lobby, I'm like, here, take the map so that you have it open. Because when you're deliberating, you can't access the map in-game, which is frustrating. But if you have it on the side, you're going to be okay. So I do think that the big barriers to entry are there, but they're also overcomable if you commit the first couple of hours into the game. You'll be fine.
Yeah,
but,
that's what I would say. Is it takes about a couple of hours of getting the maps and location of tasks down, but the tasks themselves, I would imagine most little kids would have no problem with doing the vast majority of the tasks.
The worst thing that can happen to you is you play your first game and you're an imposter. Because a lot of the game leans on you being able to lie about your pathing and your tasks and where you were and what you're doing. So if you don't know any of that and that's your first game, understand that you're going to get frustrated because that you're not going to be able to defend yourself all that well, but that you will figure it out with some volume of games put in, with some tasks played, you'll be able to get it.
Yeah, I think Lita Brillman played her first time and got imposter like her first three or four games in a row. So don't do that when you're first starting. That's the thing to avoid. I also wanted to say, not to dwell on the negative too much here, but the one other thing that I find annoying, as in, I feel like this could have, and as far as I would be concerned as a game designer, definitely should have been avoided. There are certain tasks like the med bay scan or like cleaning out the leaves in the bottom of storage where you can see because of the graphics if someone is faking it or not. And that is, you know, faking tasks is a big piece of being an imposter. I believe it's at least potentially something, a feature you can turn off and on, but the idea that this would be like the default is kind of weird to me. The idea that you can like conclusively clear people as innocent.
So yeah, when we first started playing, the first night we put a lobby together. The way we went about it, we had visual tasks on, which are the ones you described. There's like two or three tasks where if you have someone come with you and the toggle is on, they can see these tasks that you're doing, and only a crewmate has access to tasks, so therefore they are now 100% clear. So we hit a couple brick walls with that, because we would get to like the final six sometimes and four people cleared each other with tasks. So then it's like, well, moot. We know who's it. The other thing is you have the option of turning on or off confirming someone's role, which we started off with on, which is great for like the immediate confirmation, but it kind of sucks if you're an imposter, because if you're in a position where you killed and someone comes in and finds the body and you're still there, you could pin it on them and they can vote that person out and they'll see, oh, that's not an imposter, then it must be you. Then they'll come back and vote you out anyway. So we've removed those to make it, you know, harder for everybody. But I do agree that coming in as the default is a little bit of a frustrating thing. But the fact that at least we can turn them off makes me happy, because that was honestly, after everyone learns how to play, those should get switched off. At the beginning, they're fine because they allow people to figure out how to clear one another and all that. That's good. But no, once everyone knows what they're doing, you really can't have it on, because the games will finish in like 3 seconds.
Yeah, it changes a lot of things, you know, without getting too deep in the weeds here. It changes a lot if you know you're only up against one imposter now remaining,
right,
versus knowing there's a threat of two still left on the board. It's an absolutely enormous difference maker. And it always would like blow my mind when I would see clips of like mega popular streamers playing with that on. I always found that weird. Not that I've been watching a ton of it or whatever, or am in that much of a position to judge. It seems like whatever they're doing is working if it's crossing my timeline. The other things that I wanted to ask you about, because I still feel like, even having played a bunch, I'm definitely getting this sort of thing wrong. We've talked a lot, or at least in passing, about how, as with any kind of game like this, if you are one of the innocent people, you have no real incentive but to be as transparently innocent as possible at all times. And the kind of emergent strategy that I feel like I've seen is people recognizing the benefit of just staying in groups. There are certainly things right. like these sabotages that the imposter can do to try to separate people. But I feel like this is one thing I certainly don't do nearly enough of in terms of just game theory terms. I'm by myself way more often than I should be, and I die a lot because of it. But it seems like the best way of, you know, if you've spent the entire round with a couple of people and then bodies start turning up, you can immediately clear all of them. I guess what the fundamental question is for me is, as someone who does my tasks pretty slowly still here, mm-hmm. how important is it to be doing your tasks versus gaining information early on?
So that honestly comes down to the type of like player that you want to be and if you're going to be able to navigate that when you get questions. So for example, my chat on my stream will tell you I don't do tasks right away. I really don't. I spend a lot of the early game trying to figure people out and see where their pathing is and try and get some work done, because I find that the information you get at the start of the game, like if I spend that first round, maybe the second round doing that, I have enough information where I can do my tasks and figure out who it is as I'm going along. Because then, you know, I'm doing some observation in the first round. I hear the deliberation. I start putting the pieces together. Did that line up? Did that not line up? So that works for me. The other thing is combating the whole group mentality, because I do think a lot of people, there's the tendency of, well, I want to stay alive this game, so I'm going to group with people early on. And then that makes everyone that wasn't in a group suspect, right? So the me, you, because I also don't.
Yeah. I'm that guy.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm going to risk it, but I want to go do my task at my own pace and also don't want to be with like four people at all times. So the way we've done it, like in the lobbies I play and the way we've combated that is now when you're in deliberation, it's more frowned upon to be like, hey, Colin, can you come with me to these three locations? We don't do that. You can't actively draft someone specifically to go with you. What you can do is be like, can someone come with me? I have some tasks I need done. Because that way it's ambiguous and you've put the invite out, but we don't necessarily know who's going to be with you. Because let's say you do come with me and you die. There's like, well, Puya is probably it, or vice versa. So we don't want any of that kind of stuff going around. Yeah. I personally advocate for the tasks matter, but they're not the most important thing going on, because there have also been games where there's simply no tasks done. And it's like, well, if we were doing some detective work, we would have gotten through this a lot quicker.
Yeah, I feel like that would be, at this point, at least based on what I know right now, the number one thing that I wish I had recognized sooner is not being a lone wolf nearly as often and prioritizing more information-oriented map navigation in the early game than I have been to this point. Although I have made absolutely zero adjustments as recently as the last time I played and will probably show up next time doing the exact same things wrong all over again. But what, for you, were realizations that you had along the way that you wish you had come to sooner?
In the game. So for me, it's learning to change up my style. Because I do think that I have been adapting my crewmate game more and more. It's starting to become more of a hybrid of tasks and detective work. I'm not trying to focus in on just detective work. I used to be a lot more like, okay, we have to vote this person out. I'm putting my full gut on this, but then not realizing that, hey, there's still a chance you could be wrong. So that was a problem. But when I'm playing imposter, I found out one of my biggest tells was how defensive I would get when someone would think it's me if I've not done any – that I don't think I've not done anything to give them any indication. I got offended almost of like, how dare you think it's me when I've played perfectly? I was like, you need to not get defensive when you're imposter. You need to lay low and just breathe. So definitely it's those things, because I do think, especially in the early goings of the game, if you give out an impression to a group of friends that you are going to continue playing with, that sticks at least for a long time. So now for the next like 3 weeks, I'm going to be sus, because if I get even a little bit defensive or push back, I'm automatically suspect. So
I've never told you this, but in watching your streams, that was literally the one thing I picked up on, and I was gauging how defensive you were getting. That was like my one read on you, and now it's gone.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, is that learning to – I've started to like learn to adapt it. I know a couple of our friends, Liana, Scally, they've started changing their imposter games, and I've noticed, because games will end with them winning, and I'm like, wait, I was waiting for this signal. I never got it. So that for me has been big, is learning how to change it and keep people confused, and just accepting that by changing it, that means that for the next like 4, 5, 6 games, you're going to be suspected because people aren't going to be able to read you, and that'll automatically put you on the sus list. But changing your game will be better for the long term.
It feels like a long time ago, but it was probably only a week or so. I definitely was sitting there in one game saying to – I was dead, of course. But you were, as far as I was concerned, particularly defensive in some round, and I was literally saying to myself, well, I guess Puya is one of them because he only gets this way when he's the killer, and it wasn't you. And I was very disappointed that I was so far off on the one thing that I thought I had going for me there. Yeah, so I do want to say that there are definitely a lot of YouTube tutorials for absolute beginners, and then once you get the basics down, you can get into some more advanced kind of tips and tricks that are a lot more specific than anything we need to be getting into on the podcast airwaves. But it is definitely at the point where I don't know the exact number, but I'm guessing you could spend the rest of your life or close to it watching Among Us content on YouTube and Twitch at this point. So direct your attention there if all of this sounds appealing to you. Puya, what else, if anything, did you want to flag up about the game, either the intricacies that I'm forgetting about or anything else that you think may be appealing to people or things along those lines?
Yeah, we can do like quick stuff we didn't touch on from the game. As an imposter, not only you can't do tasks, obviously faking tasks is imperative. You can hit up sabotages such as the sabotaging the air, sabotaging the reactor so that people have a time limit to get that done. Otherwise, they die. You can also cut lights, which removes everyone else's visions except for the imposter. So you can maybe get away with doing some sneaky kills. There are vents in the game that are only accessible to imposters, which allow them to cut into different rooms undetected, unless, of course, they jump out of one and someone sees them. So there's a lot more wiggle room for the imposter than just killing in plain sight. They can definitely get away with doing more. All they have to do is be able to fake their way through it. If you are intrigued by any of the stuff we talked about, there are typically two types of Twitch streaming Among Us games that happen. There's the competitive lobbies where these guys act like this is life or death. I gotta do good. I gotta show up. I'm one of the best. And then there's the more casual lobbies. I personally watch the casual ones because the biggest appeal for me is bringing all the friends together and playing. Obviously, some games get heated because you're frustrated because no one's listening to you when you're right. That's fine. That happens. But I personally would lean, though. So if you want the more casual lobbies, the people I watch, Disguised Toast, he is a streamer. He used to be a Twitch streamer. He got a big check with Facebook, so now he's on Facebook Gaming. So I don't really watch his stuff on there, but he does put out clips on his YouTube. So if you just YouTube search Toast Among Us, he's, to me, the best person to watch. He's fun, entertaining, good detective work, good imposter game. Check him out. And then if you want to see some people from the world of, you know, podcasting, whether the Dom and Colin Network, whether it's RHAP, you can come through Sundays 5 Eastern over to my Twitch channel, and we will have some familiar faces playing. And a spoiler alert, the next game that's happening, we're going to have a very familiar face, not mine, from this call that'll be there. So I'm very excited about that.
Yes, I am as well. I will be there Sunday at 5, twitch.com, twitch.tv, sorry.
Twitch.tv.
Twitch.tv. I knew I was going to get that wrong. Twitch.tv/Puyaism is the place to find that. I believe Rob himself is going to be there, so that should be pretty exciting. Our own challenge co-host Brian Scally is going to be in the mix there, so that should be a lot of fun. And I have realized now, as you were saying something there, that one of the things I like most about Among Us is I have absolutely no expectations for myself, and I can always just default to, yeah, I'm probably wrong, or yeah, I'm probably going to die. And that has been very rewarding. I feel like I, too, am a fan of the more casual lobbies where people are there mostly to see their friends and so forth. Although, who knows, maybe once I actually get good at this game, I'll start slicing people apart. That wouldn't be anything like me. Before we get out of here, I did want to quickly ask you, because I know you've spent the last several months following this relatively closely. The Big Brother season just wrapped up. I ended up tuning out after the first month or so. I've heard things that Cody has gone on to play an impressive game, to say the least. I don't want to be the one to overstate anything here as someone who didn't watch it at all, but where do you think Cody's game ranks among like the all-time winning games?
So I think that ultimately it's a top five win. I think he ends up landing himself in the top five, not just from a statistical standpoint where he's played twice, come in second once and come in first the other time. And the only reason he was second that first time is because he picked the wrong person to go to the end with. But this season, ultimately, he had his finger on the pulse for the majority of the time. The one knock against him would be that there maybe wasn't enough adversity for him to face to prove that he had like a lot of what it takes. Like his alliance won almost every competition. So he was not in a place that he needed to worry, but he also did assemble them and he also did keep on top of them. So it was definitely a very impressive game to see. It led to the season being a little dull. I'm not going to lie to you. It was a little dull. I think the most exciting, the biggest fireworks were in that first month that you tuned in for. So the rest of the way was kind of a slog. But in the grand scheme of things, from a gameplay perspective, it was a very fun season to watch. If you're looking at the strategy, it was fun to watch to a degree. And obviously the content's always been fireworks. But no, as far as his win goes, Colin, I think there's going to be a conversation of where does he land in that, you know, upper echelon of like in the Will, Dan,
wow,
Andy, Derek, him, who's where? I think that's going to be a thing that's going to be happening for a while now.
Yeah, I think it was Cody that I said this about in one of our very early, maybe even preseason Big Brother podcasts, thinking that under good enough circumstances, he had kind of Hayden Moss upside, which for me is a very big compliment in the terms of reality gameplay. And it sounds like he may have even exceeded that.
Yeah, I think that that's a very apt comparison, especially given who he went to the end with in Enzo. definitely the Hayden Moss vibes for sure. But I do think he ended up doing it better because even the people within his squad that could have combated him potentially, he sussed out and got rid of before they even got a chance to. So, and ultimately, he articulated his game so well. And even in the exit interviews that we got right out the gate after the season ended, you could tell that everything he was asked, he knew what the answer was to that. Like, he's been studying the game the whole way through. So it was a win well deserved, ultimately.
How much, if any, credit does Derek get for this?
So that depends on which side of the coin you fall on as far as the conspiracy theory of was there pre-gaming, how much pre-gaming was there, how involved was he. I'll say what my opinion on it is, and it could be right or wrong. You know, it depends on who you ask, and I don't feel offended if anyone disagrees with me at all. My whole thing is, yes, potentially with a returning season, pre-gaming was a thing that happened and is a thing that will happen, but the game is 85 days long, so you can lead the horse to water. You can't make him drink. I mean, look at David. We find out that David kind of got a lot of pointers from Ovi on, like, an actual super fan of the game of, like, hey, watch this, 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 do this, 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 follow this, this, this. And then you have him asking at the end of the season, hey, what's jury management? I don't even know what that is. So you can lead someone with all the information. They got to be able to execute it. So even if Derek gave him the whole playbook, he still has to run the plays himself for 85 days. And there were wall yellers, multiple of them, that kept throwing his name under the bus, that kept saying, he's trouble, look at him. So despite all of that, he still managed to make it work, which to me is like more to be said about him than about Derek. Because again, as much as Derek can, you know, tell him things on his way into the house, once you get into the house, you kind of have to figure stuff out and do stuff on your own and have your own mind and make your own decisions. So little bit, not a lot. I think having him as a friend and as a confidant in 16 and then as a friend moving forward with that strategic mind helps, because it helps you start thinking that way, and it helps you start looking at things from their perspective, which is good in this case if you're thinking strategically. So I'll give him that, but ultimately Cody earned this one on his own.
Okay, I am going to be the horse that gets led to the water and just take that opinion as gospel until further notice. Puya, you are currently, right, covering The Masked Singer?
That's right. So I'm covering The Masked Singer. I'm co-hosting that with my partner in crime, Liana Boris. We were talking through everything there. And then I also have been hosting the 90 Day Fiancé podcast as well.
Okay, over on the reality TV Rehap Ups Network on Twitter at Puyaism, also the / for the Twitch stream. What's the other Twitch schedule like?
Yeah, so I, now with Among Us being a part of my schedule firmly, I stream 3 times a week. Might be 4 now that Big Brother's done. We'll get to that. But Tuesdays, I do a Tearless Tuesday where I bring a guest on. They pick whatever topic they wanted ahead of time. They give me a list of items they want in that topic. So, for example, I had my buddy Chappelle over last week, and we tier listed about 20 cartoons from the 90s, 80s, 2000s. And, yeah, we basically spent 2 hours hanging out and just tier listing them. What lands top, what lands in the bin, and so on. I've done about 20-plus of these now, and we've covered a lot of food items, but then also – some cartoons along the way, community characters. So it's been a fun project there on Tuesdays. And then my Friday streams have been the more laid back, no format, me in the chat hanging out. And those used to be around like 5 p.m. Eastern. I moved them to 1 a.m. now, so it's like a late night thing. People come through, they ask advice, they ask questions, they just talk, I answer back. And we're there for like 2-3 hours at a time. It's been a fun time.
Awesome. Well, Puyaism on Twitter and on Twitch to find all of that and more. Awesome times, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
I really appreciate it, Colin. I can never say no to you, and I'm looking forward to seeing if you can figure me out on the next time we play Among Us. So
probably can't, but maybe I'll get lucky. So excited for that, and let's definitely do find another reason to talk on here sometime soon. So I am on Twitter. Until next time, at Colin Stone. Dom can be found at Dom HRV, even though he has done nothing to earn that plug right now. And over on the patron feed at patreon.com/Dom and Colin, we are covering Kageyan right now, doing a full rewatch of that, which has been extremely fun to this point. The first 4 episodes are up there, about 5-6 hours or so into that. So patreon.com/Dom and Colin if that would interest you. But who knows what we're going to be back here with on the main feed. I think we may have a bit of something we haven't done in about 4 years, coincidentally. We may be coming in here talking about some election coverage sometime soon. Ooh. So we will see how that all plays out and go from there. But thank you guys who have made it this far. We will talk soon. Take care, everybody.